nigga, just stop it. Everybody know
I'm a motherfucking monster.
I'ma need to see your fucking hands at the concert. I'ma need to see your fucking hands at the concert. Profit, profit.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to another episode of the Cracked Podcast. My name is Jack O'Brien. I'm the editor-in-chief of Cracked. And today, we're talking about moral panics, sudden seizures of hysterical suspicion, and just generally bad vibes that kind of sweep across the entire nation from time to time. In the 50s, America believed that comic books were turning the straight children who read them gay, and all the gay children into toads, I believe, is how the theory went. But that was something that people actually believed, and we'll talk about some that popped up in the 80s. But it's like every once in a while, the part of our brain that's just terrified of everything decides it needs to burn off some pent-up nightmare calories it's been saving up, and like all of our brains decide to do that at the exact same time. And I actually had a thought during this conversation, and you can hear me try to formulate it into a sentence and then get distracted and start talking about Hunger Games for some reason, if you listen carefully. But my thought was that there's some connection between moral panics and some of the really awful rituals people used to do, like animal sacrifices. When I used to hear animal sacrifices in the Bible, I just assumed that people would go to the corner market, buy an anonymous chicken, and be like, this one's for you, God. But I heard something, I think, I want to say it was on This American Life this year, but it was more like you would raise a pet that you loved and then kill it for God as sort of a ritualized waking fucking nightmare that people just used to put themselves through on a regular basis. Because why? You know, we think of the 20th century as a pretty violent place because we don't remember every single other century before it. There's this historian named Steven Pinker who estimates that for the vast majority of human history, when we were tribal societies and hunter-gatherers and whatever, about 15% of people suffered violent deaths, were like murdered. In the 20th century, even if you try and come up with the highest possible estimate that you possibly can of all the people, combining like all the wars, all genocides, all man-made famines in the Soviet Union, you get 3%. So for the vast majority of our history, people were dying horribly and violently at five times the rate that they did in the 20th century, which included World War II. So the thought that I think my brain was trying to have is that moral panics are sort of what we have instead of the people we care about getting murdered and religions that make us murder our favorite pets these days. Our bodies and minds were built in a world where like horrible shit happened all the time, and our brains and bodies kind of expect to be filled with despair and rage and vengeance on a regular basis. And when the modern world doesn't hold up its end of the bargain and filled the world with horrifying misery, we have to lie to ourselves and like create a reality that fills our personal or national quota of we're at war, or they're trying to kill us, or they're trying to eat our babies and do horrible sexual things to our daughters. Anyways, that's a theory that I've been working around in my brain since I had this conversation. Here is the conversation. Give it a listen, and yeah, let me know what you think of that theory or what your theory is on why moral panics exist in the comments.
And I'll say, Whitey Chucky is child's play. Just killed another career, it's a mild day. Besides, yay, they can't stand besides me. I think me, you, and Am should menage Friday. Pink wig, thick ass, give them whiplash. I think big, get cash, make them blink fast. Now look at what you just saw, this is what you live for. I'm a motherfucking monster!
All right, I am talking to Jason Pargin, David Wong, our executive editor, who guests slash co-hosts on a number of these podcasts. How are you doing, Jason?
Fine, and for those of you unfamiliar with Cracked and you're not clear on the structure, basically if Cracked.com was the Saved by the Bell high school, Jack would be like Mr. Belding.
Yep.
And then I would be, who was the guy who went on to make the sex tape because he had a huge penis?
Screech.
Yeah, I would be that guy, that actor.
God, Mr. Belding was such an idiot. Maybe the most pathetic fictional character in the history of television.
to the point that going back and watching it, it's almost kind of creepy the way he like really wants Zach to approve of him and like tries to get involved in their plans. But yes, I've modeled my professional career after him. So today we're going to be talking about moral panics. Jason, this was your idea. So do you want to talk a little bit about what that means?
Yeah, if you're unfamiliar with the term, basically it's a specific type of urban legend that usually involves some new type of crime that's happening or a new type of drug that's being done, something the kids are doing. Whatever it is, it's always something very gruesome, something very salacious, and something that these days, these are the things your mom forwards you on Facebook. But for instance, to this day, a lot of parents won't send their kids out trick-or-treating to strangers' houses because they are afraid of the thing where strangers insert needles and razor blades into candy and fruit and things like that, or poison candy. That was a moral panic. That never happened. That's never happened ever. But somehow that entered the public consciousness, I think, in the 80s, and it just does not go away. Everybody claims they know a friend of a friend who this happened to. And so it's a certain type of thing that people worry about instead of the real things they should be worrying about. Probably the all-time historical most famous example of a moral panic is the witch hunts. For centuries, people certain that these weird women living among them were casting spells on them and causing all of them misfortune. It's always a version of that, and there's a new one every week or every month. And on Fox News right now, it's the knockout game, the obsession with the idea that black thugs are roaming the streets, randomly punching out white people for no reason.
I'm not as up on my Fox News, so this is something that's kind of out there, all over the place right now.
Yeah, and I'll come back to it in a moment because it's an interesting example of how these are usually based on like a kernel of truth, but it's just something that's overblown. And that's very typical of a moral panic. It's a lot of times it's based on one incident or one misunderstood incident, but it gets overblown to the point to where this is the national obsession. And when I was a kid, I mentioned in a previous podcast, it was Satanism. Parents were scared of Satanism, scared of music, Dungeons and Dragons, the tabletop game. These were all gateway Satanism things. But the reason I find it so interesting is that there's an element of wishful thinking in these. You can always tell what a person wants to be true by the things they believe without much evidence. And moral panics, even though they're all bad things, usually are examples of that. It's what we would prefer problems to look like, usually just because they're so much sexier or whatever.
Right. A lot of the time, there will be some inciting incident, and then you have this sense of people's imaginations just running away from them. And the whole Satanism cult panic from the 80s, it became this kind of elaborate horror movie that was being constructed by people. One of the inciting incidents was that people started doing recovered memories. They would be hypnotized by their psychiatrist, and then whatever they said during these deep hypnotic sessions was a memory that they had instead of something that they were imagining. And so it was fed by that, and it was fed by kind of this media uproar. But I don't think a lot of people remember that it was basically accepted as common knowledge that there were these satanic cults out there during the 80s that were just going around killing people and cutting up babies and just doing the most horrifying shit.
Yeah, they were claiming tens of thousands of babies had been kidnapped and sacrificed in satanic cults. They portrayed this as the big national problem we should all be worrying about. I heard sermon after sermon after sermon about this in church. And I don't know if people realize this is not just something from the evangelical Christian bubble. People went to jail. And so if you Google the West Memphis Three, maybe 1993, somewhere around there, there were three young children in Memphis that were in fact killed. Here's the kernel of truth. They were killed and found in the woods. They had been dumped in like a creek. The three teenagers were arrested for the crime based on the idea that they had ritualistically sacrificed those kids to Satan. And those three teenagers were not released until a few years ago. They were in jail for like 15 years.
Right.
But it was all based on testimony. It was based on polygraph tests. They had one young child who thought he had seen some ritual or something, and they had one woman who testified about the ritual activity in the neighborhood and later recanted. But by then it was too late. And see what happens when it's children who are the victims. Kids are imaginative. It's really easy to get a kid, once you get him going, like, now, were you ever taken into a room where a room full of people in black robes with knives were slicing open a baby? Most 7 or 8 year olds will take that and run with it. And it didn't matter that the story didn't contain any details that actually, you know, like, well, he couldn't have known that, you know. It didn't matter because at that point, it's like, well, he's just a little kid. But it wasn't until they finally found the DNA evidence, they went back and reexamined everything, that they came back and basically exonerated those three teenagers. But at the time, everyone got swept up in this idea of they had been ritualistically sacrificed. And I remember watching a documentary about this in my teenage years, like, oh, my God, they cut pieces off the kid and ate them or something. And then it turned out, no, that was done by animals after the bodies had been dumped. So it's a perfect encapsulation of it because the kids were really murdered. But that wasn't enough. And there's another case in 1992. There's a couple in Texas who went to jail based on accusations that their daycare center was in reality a satanic brainwashing cult operation. I think they're still in jail, but it's the same deal where it's so difficult to get to the truth of was there actual sexual abuse or whatever, because everyone's so obsessed with the idea of, oh my God, they're summoning Satan there. So these accusations of people actually being charged with satanic ritual abuse, there were many, many, many of these cases. And to this day, there's zero evidence that it's ever happened, even once, anywhere in the world, ever.
Right.
The idea is just too awesome that this is what evil looks like, that it's people in robes with twisty daggers.
Yeah, it's the Da Vinci Code. It's the bad guys from the Da Vinci Code or that creepy monk whipping himself and praying around a fire. And it's basically the bad guys from horror movies come to life, except that doesn't actually happen anywhere. It's just people like to imagine it for whatever reason. There's like a dark part of the American imagination that has always wanted to imagine these supernatural people who are in commune with the devil, going back, like you said, to the witch trials. And then all the way up through the 80s. And you'd think that we've taken a break from it for the time being. But yeah, like you said, the Innocence Project, this not-for-profit organization that goes around freeing people with DNA evidence, is still trying to get people out of jail who were put there by these elaborate recovered memories. One of the kind of grossest examples of what you're talking about, where you learn something about people's imagination, what they actually want from the hysteria, was a similar panic called rainbow parties, which I think we've covered on the site. But it was this idea that teenagers were like wearing different colored lipsticks and having these sex parties where girls would take turns giving guys blowjobs and they would wear different colored lipstick and you would tell how many different girls had given you a blowjob by the color of the lipstick, the rings on your dong. And someone went on Oprah saying this was a fact, and it was the biggest deal for the longest time. Everybody was freaking out. And the fact that that was imagined by some parent, and other parents were like, yep, I bet it's happening. I knew it. Just really kind of speaks badly to the parents, I guess.
One, the pure logistical issues with conducting a successful rainbow party are too numerous to list. One, you're not going to wind up with a rainbow of different colored lipsticks on your penis.
Right.
You're going to wind up with a brown smudge of a few different colors overlapping on the same part of your penis. I mean, you just have to have seen one blowjob in action to know what the problems are with this scenario, that this is probably not something that is epidemic. A very talented, well-organized person, I'm sure, could organize a rainbow party, but he would need professionals. You would not be teenage girls. There's just so much wrong with it. But to get to the root of that one, that is one of my all-time favorites because it's so clearly somebody's jerk-off fantasy
right,
that they put out there as the dangerous reality. Males have, in general, have a habit of taking our jerk-off fantasies and putting them out into the world as grave concern. Well, you know what's going on. they're taking all of the hot teenage girls and lining them up nude on their knees, and then all of the boys are lining up and creating an assembly line of blowjobs, and all of those girls are blowing them in turn. We need to put a stop to this. I'm going to go. I have to go do something right now.
Right.
I have to use the bathroom. I'll be back. Anyways, there was a pediatrician who wrote an anti-sex book in 2002. She relayed a secondhand story of one of her patients claiming she had been invited to one of these parties but didn't go. And threw it out there as an anecdote. This is the type of pressure our teenagers are under now, because the world is now just a nonstop orgy. So, A, she wasn't there. The kid wasn't there. So by the time it reaches the reader, this is like a fourth-hand account. But by God, that idea was so enthralling that it has entered the pop culture consciousness forever. So, yeah, you're right. She did an episode of Oprah. At that point, millions of mothers across America became terrified that their child was now attending one of these mass blowjob orgies. There was a 2005 book written called The Rainbow Party for young adults, a novel about a girl having been invited to one of these, cautionary tale, written by a male author. I have never met that author. I don't want to question his motives. It is my personal belief that he had a huge erection the entire time he wrote the book. But since then, now it's done. Those parties happened in an episode of Nip Tuck, came up in an episode of NCIS. It got referenced on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Now it's in the pop culture as a thing that just occurs. You know, it's mentioned in passing the way that the existence of the city of New York is mentioned in passing. It's just a thing that we all know the teenagers are doing. So right now, somewhere in America, a concerned mother is having an incredibly awkward conversation with her very confused 13-year-old daughter, saying, "Now, honey, what's going to happen soon? You're going to get invited to a blowjob orgy, but you're going to be asked to blow all of your male classmates. Your father and I are telling you, you should not do this. I know that all of your friends do it all the time. I know that this is all you do every weekend is go to these mass blowjob orgies and you all blow all of your male classmates in an assembly line fashion to create rainbows of lipstick on their penises. We are asking you to make better decisions than that and to not participate." And I'm just imagining how many young girls have went to school the next day and, like, asked their friends, "Have you ever been to a party where, like, all of the guys have made you, like, blow them, like, in a line?" And at which point, hopefully, one of them will ask, "Once the first guy climaxes, is he going to be interested in 8 more blowjobs?" Like,
yeah, and hopefully they're not like, "Oh, yeah, yeah, we do those all the time to try and look cool."
Or even better, like, "No, but that sounds like a great idea. Let's see if we can get one of these together." But they're going to be disappointed. That's not going to turn out the way you think it's going to. All the guys are going to be there. None of the girls are going to come. It's going to be a bunch of guys standing around. They got a big bowl of, like, they bought a bunch of lipstick.
You know, you talk about the olden days, people would have human sacrifices, right? Where ritualistically, every month or so, people would sacrifice someone to the gods. And I feel like there's a sense in which these moral panics are offloading some cultural need that a given culture has to just have somebody pay for whatever they perceive as being wrong with their culture at that point in time. And it's no more accurate or just than pulling names out of a hat to sacrifice. My historical knowledge is based on Hunger Games, that historical documentary. But the way that an invention will be invented by 3 separate people at the same time, there are these ideas that time have come. Like the rainbow parties, you said it was just something some girl said in passing to her physician, and at the same time, or maybe in response to that, a guy wrote a novel with that idea in it, and just, it was this creepy idea that was percolating in the unconscious.
Yeah, I think the novel came 2 years later based on the Oprah episode, based on some agent or publisher or editor saying, "I just heard the greatest idea for a novel."
Right.
You've ever heard in your life.
One thing that we've covered on the site is Three Mile Island. You say that people's minds immediately go to, you know, a nuclear reactor melting down, America's Chernobyl, you know, a huge disaster. I think there's a Hooters wing sauce that's named Three Mile Island wing sauce. It's like their hottest wing sauce. And the truth of that situation is that there was never really any danger or any dangerous conditions, at least. They tested the people who were exposed around that plant, and they had radiation comparable to somebody who had just flown in an airplane. But that panic happened about 3 weeks after a Michael Douglas movie called The China Syndrome that was about a sort of Chernobyl-type situation happening in America. And people were panicking about that idea. And it seems so stupid. It seems like people would be like, oh, well, it's that movie that's making us really nervous about this whole Three Mile Island business. But at the time, nobody really notices that. Nobody is self-aware enough. And despite the fact that there was no negative fallout, no huge negative consequences, people went away from nuclear power as a form of energy to invest in. And nuclear had a lot of trouble getting investors after Three Mile Island. And it was totally based on this fear that was almost based on nothing. I also have this theory that the whole Jeffrey Dahmer thing, the first thing that comes to your mind when you hear Jeffrey Dahmer's name is
a cannibal.
Cannibal, right?
That's a joke when comedians make Jeffrey Dahmer jokes, is about him having eaten somebody.
I was Googling him this morning, and like the articles from the time, there's a neighbor who's haunted by the fact that she once took a sandwich from him, and she doesn't know now what could have been in there. And she, the title of the article is, quote, "I probably ate a human body part." The haunting legacy of Jeffrey Dahmer. The truth of the situation is that it was based on a single sentence that Dahmer had given, I think. This is something that I heard in a college lecture 10 years ago, and it's hard to find anybody backing this up because every news story you read about it is just nonstop crazy about. He was a cannibal, he ate people, but I'm pretty sure it was based on like one thing he said. He did a lot of horrible things. He kept the bodies of the people he killed and, you know, melted them in acid and kept one person's head in formaldehyde or some preserving fluid. And it was gross. I'm not saying he wasn't a horrifying monster of a human being, but the fact that we focused in on the cannibal thing is strange to me out of the many, many horrifying things that he did. And there just wasn't a ton of evidence that he did eat anyone. And then I was looking back because I remembered that it was 1991 and Silence of the Lambs came out around that time. And so Silence of the Lambs came out in February of 1991, and Jeffrey Dahmer was apprehended in July of 1991. So we were already, as a nation, obsessed with this idea of a serial killer who was a cannibal. And then this guy gets caught and happens to be the great serial killer cannibal of the 20th century. But when you look at the actual evidence that he was a cannibal, there's not a lot there. It's a lot of people kind of taking the fact that he preserved the bodies, first of all, because he was killing so many people, it was hard to dispose of the bodies. So he kept them until he could find a good way to dispose of them, but also he took pictures and, you know, did gross sexual things with them. But it just immediately became, he was the cannibal of Milwaukee. It's almost this sense in which there was something in the culture that needed a cannibal at that time. They needed a real cannibal, just like the Three Mile Island thing. We needed a nuclear meltdown crisis, and so we kind of invented one.
You know, in the case of Three Mile Island and the movie, I think it's an issue where the movie was a good idea to get greenlit because of a public nervous about nuclear power. It's a scary technology. And so the moment there's an incident, it feeds that narrative, but it's the same narrative. In that case, the movie didn't invent it. The cannibal thing I can't explain, but that's the first time I've ever heard that connection made. And for some reason, all of the other things he did, having sex with the bodies, things like that, for some reason that gets lost. It's the eating them that really gets us, and that's almost like mistimed viral advertising for the movie.
Right.
That's so strange, but you're right, because it's not just a fairly successful movie. It was an iconic pop culture figure that was born. I mean, Hannibal Lecter, everybody knew who that was. It was compelling. So suddenly this real-life Hannibal gets caught. That's interesting how that narrative immediately fits, but it's also interesting how, like, there's no such thing as being bad enough for us. We've always got to add that little bit. In some of the cases of people being convicted of satanic ritual abuse, I don't doubt they were real abusers. In some cases, some. It's just that they're just pedophiles. They weren't worshiping Satan. But it's like, that's not enough. There's got to be a worldwide conspiracy of these dark priests who are trying to sacrifice the innocence of our children, because for some reason it's too mundane. And this is what I was saying earlier about how you can tell so much about a person by which ones of these they choose to believe, because it's not like real life doesn't offer you enough things to worry about. Heart disease is not a crazy rumor somebody made up. There's a real strong chance that's going to be what's going to kill you based on what you eat and what you smoke and the lifestyle you live. Texting while driving is not a crazy old wives' tale that mothers made up to make their kids stop texting while they're driving. There's a real good chance you're going to die if you keep doing that. These are legitimate things that are ever-present dangers that we never think about and never really talk about or worry about all that much. But then something like these other things will capture your imagination. And I had mentioned in the intro the knockout game that you had not heard of, but if you go to the Drudge Report, if you turn on Fox News, they're talking about it right now. It is the idea that they've become obsessed with. This is the prime national concern that the blacks have declared war on the whites. And so the way this is manifesting itself is young black youths in all nations around the world are roving the streets with cameras, and they film themselves punching innocent, law-abiding white people unconscious, and then film it and upload it to YouTube. And so whenever they talk about it, they've got like a compilation of clips of this happening. And they'll run these back to back to back, and it's like, this is an epidemic, this is a crisis. You have lawmakers demanding new hate crime legislation to stop this from happening. They've like asked police departments in all these cities to, like, you know, put out warnings to people. They're demanding some sort of federal action. And the constant thing is, why isn't the mainstream media, the non-Fox News media, talking about this epidemic crisis of these racist black people punching out white people just for being white? And it's difficult to tell where it came from, but there's recorded instances of people randomly claiming that they were knocking people out as part of a game going back to the 90s. It absolutely has occurred, but there's something like 120,000 random assaults in America every year. Right? Sometimes it's just a crazy person. Sometimes a person is drunk or high. Sometimes it's a mugging. It's not an uncommon crime. And sometimes people just punch each other because they don't like your face. Or sometimes it is racially motivated. If you look Jewish, the guy may randomly decide to punch you. If you look Muslim, and so on. What they've done is gone fishing for a bunch of clips on YouTube and strung them together. And finally, somebody went through and started tracking down the origins of the clips they were using. And one was from several years ago. One was from Europe. And there's one that Bill O'Reilly kept talking about where there was a young black teenager. He's like 17 years old. And he had punched an older Jewish man out, and they had claimed that, you know, it was this knockout game, it was this organized anti-white game. Somebody finally went and interviewed both the puncher and the victim, and neither one of them had any freaking idea what they were talking about. The guy's like, yeah, I totally punched him. He just kind of flipped out and punched the nearest person to him, but there wasn't like a game where we were keeping score or anything. In fact, I'd never heard of that until you brought it up. But they've latched onto this idea and now talk about it literally daily, to where they're demanding some sort of legislation. It does not take a super genius to figure out why they want this to be true, because these are the young minorities who are getting the welfare money, and they're talking about cutting unemployment benefits, cutting welfare benefits, things like that. To say, look, see, here's the real racism. It's these young black people hating the whites. So therefore, your racism was A, perfectly justified, And B, in fact, is the only solution. This is a problem that magically can be solved with more racism. If we just preemptively start treating these people as potential attackers right off the bat, see, everything, all of your prejudices were justified. You know, you were exactly right to think everything you thought right up until now. And in fact, you people, you Fox News viewers, you know, you elderly white people who vote Republican, you are the true victims and thus the true heroes for persevering under such circumstances. And so...
Right. And George Zimmerman suddenly looks like he knew what he was doing, and he was right to be scared. I think it probably ties into that story as well, right?
Yeah, because it's like getting it back. This is a constant thing. Anytime there's a black-on-white crime, the Drudge Report will blast it from the headlines because it's to offset any talk of injustice against blacks or that this is somehow an unjust world for minorities. They've fed a consistent narrative that random street crimes by black people against white people for being white, this is what you all need to really be worried about. So on your list of concerns for bad things that can happen to you in your life, they want to move that all the way up to the top, and not because it's likely, and not because it's a new trend or it's even necessarily something to be more worried about than now. And to clarify, they asked the NYPD to like put out an alert to tourists or whatever, warning them about the knockout game. And they wouldn't do it because they're like, we've not seen any increase. Don't get me wrong, this is New York. There's thousands of random assaults every year. But we can't find any evidence that this is a thing you should be worried about any more than just the routine muggings and all that stuff that happens. Trying to move that up on your list of priorities purely for this other reason, to feed this other psychological need. And you can find that with every one of these we've discussed. There's a reason you want to believe that evil looks different than it really does because of what it says about you. Because I may have a criminal record a mile long, I may be unemployed, I may be my wife, but I'll tell you what, right now, you're not going to see me ritualistically slicing your baby open. So I'm way better than that, and it lowers everybody's standards. But it's fascinating how much we have to inflate the bad people in order to clear that bar. It's not enough for Jeffrey Dahmer to just have severe mental illnesses and all this. He also has to be eating the people, and we just will not hear otherwise. I don't think you would ever convince the public, no matter if you went on a crusade to try to clear that minor part of his record, I don't think people would ever hear it, because this ultimately comes down to what we want to believe.
It is really interesting. The knockout game, I think, can be connected to, I think in the 80s, there was the urban legend that gangs were driving around without their lights on, and if you flashed your lights at them, they would kill you. That's how they decided. It was like a gang initiation meant to rid the world of helpful citizens, helpful drivers, I guess, was the idea. Which, that's a horrible one, by the way, because it makes people afraid to tell people when they've forgotten to turn their lights on and just leaves them to drive out into traffic with their lights off. But there are sort of these genres of moral panics that just come back time and again. Have you watched Capturing the Freedmans? The movie about... It starts out as a movie about a clown and his family. He takes video of his family, and it's really day-to-day, their day-to-day lives, and they're kind of a bunch of weirdos, but they're very endearing. And then the father gets accused of sexual abuse by some local parents, and the movie is very ambiguous about whether anything went on. He was teaching like computer classes out of his basement, but the acts that they describe, the abuse that they describe going on, just goes haywire to the point that there's all these games and rituals, and they're playing leapfrog without any clothes on. And it's just this horrifying thing, but like such graphic detail that the kids are like coming up with while being kind of led on these testimonies by the police and by a couple psychiatrists and their parents. It seems like that is in line with the satanic ritual stuff that was happening around the same time, but nobody connected it to this big satanic cult. It was just, there was something about that time that wanted to believe that. And I wanted to just go through some things that seem to always crop up time and again, like file sharing panics or just the idea of intellectual property was something that I didn't know before we started writing about it on the site. The whole idea that the internet is going to ruin everything and ruin music and ruin all media has come up with every single new type of medium. So when the VCR came out, the MPAA freaked out. Home video viewing is going to be the end of cinema as we know it. And going all the way back to record players, all classical musicians were freaking out about the idea that you'd be able to capture what they do on a record and take it away from them and from the live space and from them getting paid by audiences. And stupid lawsuits seems to be another one, like the McDonald's lawsuit, the woman who sued McDonald's because she spilled her own coffee on herself.
That's really interesting because it's weird how in those they make you side with the corporation. Like the whole idea is all lawsuits are just people basically stealing from the innocent organizations or institutions that have money. But every time you bring up frivolous lawsuits on the internet anywhere, somebody will say something to the effect of, well, and what about that guy who was breaking into that family's home and he tripped and fell and then sued them for his injuries and won? That one has been out there for a long, long time because it's so perfect. This guy's a criminal and he's breaking in. And then because he injured himself on your property, then you have to pay. This is just the law run amok here. And so surely we need to have some laws in place to make it harder to sue people. And then somebody finally tried to trace the origins of that one back. And it wound up being the actual case. It was a kid, he had gotten up on the roof of a high school, where I think he was a student, and he was trying to steal a light or something up there. Or maybe he was just vandalizing it, you know, as a kid stuff. And he fell through a skylight and injured himself. And then wound up suing for his injuries because that's automatic. When you have injuries, before your insurance company pays, they're going to sue to see if someone else is liable. They're not just going to voluntarily pay your medical bills. And they wound up either winning or settling because what had happened was someone had previously fallen through that skylight. They had painted over it so it looked like part of the roof. And like a maintenance worker, somebody had put their foot through it and they had been told to fix it, to actually board over and put roof there. It's unsafe to have just a painted glass there. And they didn't do it. So this kid was up to committing a crime, but then fell through the skylight that they had been told to fix. And that's how he won, was because I think the idea was, look, if it hadn't been him, it was going to be somebody else. You were told this was a hazard. So when retelling that story, you have to remove all that, and you have to make it a family home. You have to make it an innocent family, and they're not home. And then this thug crashes through a window. They'll usually change it to a window, or maybe they'll say skylight. And then he trips over the coffee table and sues for his injury. See, it makes it so much more egregious. And each person who retells the story and puts that little twist on it to make it a little bit worse, a little bit more outrageous, that's the person who you should have questions for. And it's the same thing in the 80s with the satanic ritual abuse. There was book after book after book after book written detailing down to the second how these rituals were carried out. Now to the moment, the opening of the rib cage and the heart being extracted from the fetus or from the infant, and then the high priest eats one piece of the heart and then passes it around to his six assistant priests, and they each take one bite of the heart while it's still beating, down to the molecule of detail. And I'm picturing some writer just sitting there with his imagination on fire, dreaming up the grossest thing you can think of, but then it gets put out there as truth, and then some real person goes to jail. If it's a case where they rationalize it to themselves like, well, yeah, but it's still, they're probably doing it. I'm just filling in the details to help bring it home to people. But we all know this really goes on. I'm just giving them an idea of what it probably looks like. I don't know, because I think the pediatrician who originally shared the Rainbow Party story, her book was about the horrors of sex. So even though she never verified that this party happened, never went there, never followed up with the girl's parents, never followed up with anybody, I think she figures, well, it's better safe than sorry. Because if something like this is going on, what harm is there in warning parents about it? But then at that point, everybody else after that is just trying to get attention and, more importantly, trying to justify, well, we certainly didn't do this when we were teenagers. I didn't attend a single blowjob assembly line party in all my high school years. this is a sign of how the kids today suck so much compared to me. And that's why so many of these stories involve things teenagers are doing. We had another one we detailed was the crazy new drugs the kids are doing or the crazy new ways they're drinking. They're vodka eyeballing or they're putting vodka on tampons. And it's all based on like one YouTube video where one person claimed they were doing it. And then the media immediately reports it as new trend sweeping the youth. One example is all they need to get all of the parents to watch and then to sit down and tell, again, their very confused 14-year-old daughter. Now, I know you're probably putting vodka on your tampons and inserting it so you can get drunk vaginally. You should not do this. This is wrong. This is not a healthy way to ingest alcohol. Do it the normal way, the way your father does.
Butt chugging. Do it like dad does.
Yeah, butt chugging. Yeah, that's the other one.
Yeah. I mean, growing up, I was under the impression that crime was rising and going out of control when the opposite was true, that kids were getting stupider in America when the opposite was true, that their test scores and just general IQs are going up and up everywhere in the world. It's not just America. And I think that's at least partially the purpose that these panics serve, is to just kind of get that idea out there that things are getting worse. We need to go back to the way things used to be and listen to your parents, kids.
Yeah, and the thing is, if you try to say this is not something to be alarmed about, then you get dismissed as you don't know what the real world is like. You've got your rose-colored lenses. But for some reason, the more salacious version always seems like the more realistic version to people. But they have to understand, we're not saying that there's no problems out there. There's just different problems. And for example, a job that I had back when I used to have a real job, I used to work with kids with learning disabilities. It was very, very difficult to get parents and administrators and teachers to get on board and understand what learning disability their kid had, or the kid might need medication, the kid might need some sort of accommodations in the classroom. You know, whether it's dyslexia, whether it's attention deficit problems, anything all the way up to like auditory processing disorders where they can't process sound correctly, whatever. Very difficult to sell them on that. What they all wanted to talk about were school shootings, because this was after Columbine, because this is rampant. I send my kid to school every day just scared that he's not going to come home because of all these shootings. Hard to explain that in that year that Columbine happened was one of the record low years for school shootings, because school shootings do not normally look like that.
Right.
They look like two young black teenagers in a poor school shooting each other in the lunchroom, and the news media just not giving a single crap about it.
Right.
And over time, we've gotten better at that. Metal detectors in schools, keeping the guns out of schools, a little bit better process for handling it, so that number had gone down. But the vast mass majority of shootings that happened in schools were at these parts of the country, parts of the city, that we just have abandoned. The news crews don't go there. We just don't care. So then it happens in a wealthy, white, middle-class school district in Colorado, and suddenly it's world news, and school shootings are a new problem that we all have to be worried about. Because now, well, gosh, if wealthy white people are doing it. So trying to explain to these people that your kid has a far, far better chance over the long term of being struck by lightning at school, or, to be realistic, the chances of falling off a piece of playground equipment. That claims a fair number of injuries or lives every year. There's a lot of ways you can be, you know, if the school has a swimming pool, there's a lot of legitimate dangers. Getting shot, very remote possibility, unless they live in one of these high crime areas, in which case they already know that. But that's not who I was talking to. I was talking to people in rural Illinois, scared to death that Columbines were just breaking out. Because surely what the news media shows us is just one example of what must surely be happening all over the country all the time. And in reality, no. That became news because it was a bizarre, singular event. The mass shooting at a school had happened in many decades.
I didn't realize that that was one of the lowest years for school shootings. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, because the trends had been going the same way as with the rest of violent crime. All of those lines are heading downward. There are other concerns. You know, obesity is a big problem. Diabetes is a big problem. Big problem. These are things that will kill your child in the long run. They just won't kill them this week. But getting people to worry about that, that's boring. And besides, where do you get a sense of moral superiority from that? Because, you know, after all, I'm the one who controls the kid's diet. So that would be pointing the finger back at me. So it's much better to imagine that there's some external force out there that is corrupting my kid in ways that I would never dream. That can't be my influence. So there's always, like you said, almost like the scapegoat, right? This is the group we're going to declare that the real evil is coming from.
During the time that we were growing up, and I think the obesity epidemic was kind of exploding and becoming a major problem. My major concern was artificial sweetener gives you cancer, all these different things that supposedly give you cancer that turns out don't actually. Artificial sweetener, that's based on one study where they fed lab rats. To get the equivalent effects, you would have to eat a dump truck full of NutraSweet every day to give yourself cancer. But those were sort of the stories that dominated the media when we were growing up, when it came to nutrition and food and stuff like that. We did an article on things that you always hear give you cancer that don't. And I was shocked. Microwaves, it's almost impossible for the radiation from a microwave, even if you're like standing in front of an open microwave, which they don't recommend. But the levels just aren't high enough to give you that. But that's just always been in the back of my mind ever since. I think it's just anytime it's a new technology, people have a tendency to assume that it's going to give you cancer or create a panic around it.
Well, but that comes back to the nuclear power and the China syndrome stuff. Again, you know, when the nuclear bomb was invented, and then talk of nuclear power shortly thereafter. There were many, many, many science fiction movies that all featured some giant monster, and they were all created the same way. They, like, got a blast of radiation. Well, that's how the Incredible Hulk in the original, right? He got blasted with radiation from some nuclear thing. And so they had already been trained that radiation is dark magic. It makes you deformed. It eats your skin. It's this weird thing out there. So when nuclear power starts to become common, they start to build these plants everywhere. Already people are scared of what these things are doing to them. So it doesn't take much. It's interesting because we know instinctively that coal mining, for instance, is dangerous as hell and has killed thousands and thousands of people. Then mine collapses from black lung. It's a dirty, hazardous job. But for some reason, those deaths kind of become invisible to us. But if one person dies or a dozen people die from some sort of a nuclear power accident or a windmill explodes and kills somebody, the fact that it's new and dangerous, even if it's less dangerous, for some reason means so much more. There was a national headline when one of the new electric cars, that a Tesla Roadster, caught on fire. Its battery caught on fire. And everybody was like, see, this newfangled electric car technology is it's witchcraft, basically. Right. It's just you're sitting on a time bomb. You realize your existing vehicle has 15 gallons of explosive liquid called gasoline. You've seen action movies, cars explode and they crash and things. Didn't that register with you that there's flammable stuff in your car already and there's actually much less of it when your car becomes electric, if any at all? But it doesn't matter. The fact that it's new, it's like somehow this is making the world more dangerous, even if you can prove statistically that it's not. So if somebody invents a new type of gun, like a rail gun or a laser or something, the first time somebody's accidentally shot with one of those, it's going to be worldwide news, even though the number of people accidentally getting shot with regular old guns happens at a rate of thousands a year, and we just completely write those off because the old dangers aren't interesting anymore. So we've got to invent new ones.
Yeah, one of the most shocking panics that I couldn't believe wasn't based on anything was Toyotas that were accelerating out of nowhere, right?
Yeah.
And I think it was based on people realizing there were now computers in every car that were like kind of controlling everything. And the idea was these computers were going haywire and just making cars accelerate and accelerate and accelerate and lose control. And it was this really terrifying idea. But when they went back and looked into it, there's really no evidence that that ever happened. They think it was a lot of the time user panic. The foot mat would get stuck on top of the accelerator and people would freak out and not realize that was happening. And because they had heard these myths about cars taking off on the owners, they just assumed that's what was happening. But they never found any evidence that that was happening. But
yeah, and they did a recall on every model for several years because I own a Toyota. and they had two things they wanted to install. They changed out the floor mats and demanded you throw away your old floor mats. And then they inserted a device that's an automatic acceleration kill. Like, if you try to brake while the car's accelerating out of control, it automatically kills the engine. Both of those things are just done, and this actually seriously impacted Toyota's. They fell out of being the number one car maker in the world to be overtaken by GM because of this. And it was never a thing. There was one incident where a woman had called 911 in a car that was speeding out of control, and that call became the source of the panic. This could be you. You got the kids in the car. And they examined the car endlessly, and they could find nothing wrong with it. And there was another guy that claimed his Prius became self-aware and took off, and they think he just made it up. He was claiming he did to solve the problem, would have solved the problem. And they said this, nobody knows, he was just trying to jump on the bandwagon. But at that point, that's it. It's done. Everybody who owns a Toyota, now the late-night comedians start making jokes about it, about your car taking off without you. It becomes a part of the national consciousness, and very few people will stop and take a few minutes, because with the Internet, it's easy. Take a few minutes and just trace it back and see if you can figure out where it originated from. Get the raw stats on it. And it's so frequently disappointing when you do, but disappointing is the key word there, because there was a famous quote from C.S. Lewis, my favorite author, wrote the Narnia books, but also wrote a bunch of books about philosophy and theology. But he said, if you hear a really horrific story about somebody, some horrible crime they've committed, and then a week later it turns out to not be true, it was just a routine crime, he's like, ask yourself, are you disappointed a little bit? Because there's an important test there. You say, always stop and ask yourself, do you find yourself sort of mentally flipping the switch to go back to believing the story back when it had cannibalism and blowjob orgies in it? Do you prefer the bad to be a little worse than it is? Always stop and ask yourself, why, when you hear these panics debunked, why do you immediately resist it? Why do you immediately get angry at the person who tries to tell you it's not true? Because I'm telling you, try something today. Go down to the comments section of a Fox News, anything on the Fox News website, and link them to one of the articles where they've analyzed the knockout game and said it's probably not that big of a deal, and watch the reaction you get. The reaction will not be, oh, that's interesting. Yeah, there's not a lot of stats to back that up, are there? You will get rage. You will get pure, blind rage that you're blind. You're blind to the black-on-white war that's going on in our streets right now, and you're trying to kill us because you're trying to get us to lower our defenses against this hazard that we all truly in our hearts know is there, even if your crazy statistics and actual records of things occurring don't happen to support it. You can't fool me with your crazy actual evidence of things occurring. We all know what the situation really is. We have a, how do you know that? Because I heard a story that I couldn't resist telling to other people who think like me.
That's everyone's homework. Go down and flame the Fox News comments with the truth and see how angry it makes them. And see how angry it makes you.
Do that today instead of working.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and sometimes it's almost like a preloaded narrative. I feel like every Black Friday, local news is there with their cameras ready to capture any sort of stampede that might be happening or might seem to be occurring. I remember we wrote an article kind of debunking some Black Friday myths and a bunch of the violence that was reported the previous year. There was like a shooting at a Toys R Us that was completely gang-related. Had nothing to do with the fact that it was Black Friday. It was just a guy who had ratted on another guy, saw him, and they shot at each other. And it was called a Black Friday massacre, and they just totally smoothed over the fact that it had nothing to do with shopping or people trying to get the same toys. I feel like that's sort of a preloaded narrative that we have each year.
Yeah, and it's a self-sustaining thing, because now the frantic stampede aspect of Black Friday, everybody wants that. The retailers feed that. They'll make ads joking about it, right? Target has ads joking with the woman pressed up against the glass of their doors, like Black Friday is going to be chaos. And they make sure the cameras are there, and there's always video of people running through the doors of the store. Like, you don't think those people are playing up to the camera crew a little bit? And so it is now accepted narrative that this is how people behave on Black Friday based on the few we were able to capture on camera. And so the fact that people are like fighting over each other and knocking each other down or stabbing each other, this is now an annual thing. We want it to be true, and now it is true. Everything that they do is based around making something like this occur. So we're going to open the doors at midnight. We're going to have a bunch of crazy sales, but we're only going to have two of the thing that's on sale. So if you want it, you A, have to be the type of person who shops at 2 in the morning on Thanksgiving, and then B, we're not going to have enough for everybody, so you have to wait outside the door. It's probably going to be cold, and then we're going to open the door, and whoever can sprint to the thing first gets it.
Right.
It's not a mystery, you know, what's going to happen there.
There's no other scenario in which that would be considered a good idea or even remotely advisable by the legal department of Walmart.
Right. So there's a case where the panic almost feeds the behavior in some ways. Because I'm not a Black Friday shopper, I don't know what the attraction is in doing it unless that element of this is slightly dangerous is enticing to a certain type of person. And maybe a certain type of person who would, in fact, stab you for your PlayStation 4. And the goal is to get that person in the store at that time. I don't know.
Yeah, it definitely makes it seem like there's something to be had there, right? It never makes sense to me because they're always fighting over the last of a given toy. I mean, they made a whole movie about this, Jingle All the Way, but there's no such thing as the last toy. There's never a last toy. There's always going to be more toys at other locations. But creating that illusion, creating the idea of scarcity artificially, because that's not an issue that exists in the modern world, but you create that with this kind of idea of people going crazy to try and get these amazing deals before other people, and I guess people buy into it. I seem to encounter more and more people who go and wait and start waiting there at midnight, whereas before, I think every sane, rational person I'd ever spoken with was like, oh my God, are you kidding? That would be a fucking nightmare. But it's something I've heard people doing and bragging about, the great deal that they got. I should have followed up and asked them how many people they had to punch in the face to get that deal.
Yeah, and in the era when you can actually shop from home, that makes less sense than it ever has. It's getting into the true meaning of the holiday, which is a previous episode of the podcast
people can listen
to. But with the first example I mentioned today, the Satanism thing, once that panic started, every band knew that putting that pentagram on the cover of the album was an instant 100,000 copies sold. Because it would land it on the warning list of all these Christian groups. And telling a teenager, now this metal album is too evil for you. It's like telling them, hey, you need to stay away from this porn. This is too arousing. There are stories of people getting erections that literally injured them. So don't, you can't, this is too hot. This porn, this is on our too erotic list. Please stay away.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a perfect cycle until every band, no matter how tame their music and the actual songs could have been about anything, about some girl who broke their heart when they were 12. But by God, they're going to be up there in leather and the black eyeliner.
The funniest example of that is Kiss, right? Knights in Satan's Service. The idea that those guys had anything to do with devil worshiping is so laughable. They were just rock and roll clowns.
Right, and the idea that somewhere deep in the bowels of hell, you have Satan, who was the originator of the original concept of sin and of greed and envy and all of these things that corrupt the human soul. And that when you get purely in tune with Satan to where you're doing his bidding, he will say to you, okay, get some clown makeup. One guy is going to have a star on his eye.
Right.
All right? And the other guy's going to be like a cat or something. And then you're going to have boots that are like a silver lame boot, but they're going to have really tall soles on them. And so it'll make you all look taller or something. And then you're going to sing songs about how you like to rock and roll all night.
And party every day.
Because that's what evil looks like. Evil is not a dictator committing genocide against 2 million impoverished children and murdering them, burying them in mass graves. No. It's a guy with, like, hairspray in his hair up there singing about how he likes to party.
Yeah, but have you seen that guy's tongue? It's kind of gross. You're telling me that guy's not in some service of Satan with that tongue? I think Kiss is the most ridiculous manifestation of that idea.
Yeah. Yeah, and I believe there's somebody out there right now with the camera saying, I'm going to go punch a random dude on the street and you're going to film it and we're going to be famous.
Like, right.
Back in my day when people used to try to get on America's Funniest Home Videos and win the $10,000, you know, all the dudes are going to see me out there punching this guy out like a badass. And I guarantee you it will be on the news tomorrow if we get it uploaded. We can't put it on YouTube. We have to put it on Live Leak or on World Star Hip Hop. That's right. Where the videos of actual violence go. But there has to be a self-sustaining element to probably more of these than what you know, because there's always going to be people that want the reputation. There were teenage Satanists. That was a real thing. It's just they were all very sad eighth graders, usually kind of overweight, and they just had black makeup on, and they had a satanic Bible that they had bought at the mall. They had some black candles. That's as far as it went. But it was enough to scare people and intimidate people and make people afraid of you, and that's what they wanted, because that's power.
Yeah.
And so people's dumb fears, there's always somebody willing to feed it. You know, and if you're a certain type of crazy killer and you're at your trial and you know you're going to jail, why not create a media frenzy? You don't think that Charles Manson doesn't love the camera? I mean, good God, he lives for that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I think happened with Dahmer. I think he confessed to 17 murders and was convicted of 15. So there were two extras he wanted to claim that they couldn't find a way to pin on, which cops are not usually. They like to get those cases solved.
This whole episode, this is all a setup for Jack's upcoming book, Exonerating Dahmer for all of his crimes. He asked me to put this episode together so that we could start the promotional tour for The Dahmer Is Innocent.
Dahmer Lives.
Really fell out the lane with this shit. Man, print this shit. I'm a misfit. Gotta stop in the guts of the most irrational beast in the district. Born to the next-gen system. Slow water drip to the temple to live in a prison. When the walls don't appear to your vision. One floor down from that mall's that prison. But shower stars to get all y'all missing.
All right, that was our conversation about moral panics. A few last thoughts to leave you with. First of all, my theory that we invent these moral panics to replace our war and murder emotions. It's just weird that we blame the media for showing sex and violence on TV. But why are those two things mentioned in the same breath without a second thought? I understand why humans want to watch sex and why we want to watch the Food Network, but violence, watching other human beings get destroyed, isn't a basic human need, but it gets mentioned right in there with sex and food porn. It's just weird. Also, I did a bunch of research on the Dahmer confessions. Not a bunch. I Googled around a little bit after this conversation in case I ended up being wrong and he totally was a cannibal. I was going to use a voice modulator to make it sound like Jason was making all those claims. But I couldn't find any detailed account that was remotely convincing from Dahmer during his confessions about how he loved eating people. The closest I could come is this psychiatrist who said, at first he only admitted eating one victim's bicep, saying it was big and he wanted to try it. And then later on, he said he left someone's head and heart in a refrigerator to eat later. So this book, which is supposed to be like a scientific or like a journalistic account, follows that up with the detail that coworkers said Dahmer brought meat to lunch topped with, quote, my special gravy, but refused to give them a taste. That's one of the pieces of evidence. There's just always these sensational details thrown in that sound like total nonsense urban legend. Anytime I try and look for reliable details about him actually being a cannibal. And I mean, it's also worth keeping in mind, he eventually went on TV and gave an hour-long interview to Stone Phillips, and he enjoyed the fame and realized people were really into this cannibal shit, I guess. Okay, that's it. On to footnotes. We opened up with my favorite song on my beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy by Kanye, Monster, featuring Jay-Z and Nicki Minaj. The lyrical content feels appropriate for reasons that should be obvious to you, so I won't explain them. And then you heard just now at the end, Sea Legs off of Killer Mike and LP's album Run the Jewels. They also call themselves that, Run the Jewels. It's confusing. Killer Mike is a rapper from Atlanta who's just
great. He released an album last year, 2 years ago, called R.A.P. Music, or something to that effect, that had some great 80s popular and just general cultural analysis, paranoid Reagan era stuff. LP, you've heard on past episodes. He's the guy whose song The Fool Retard you can find on our Spotify playlist. Should find it. It's great. And we are going to ride out to the last 90 seconds of Sea Legs and then the first 10 seconds of Job Well Done, because I love the transition. It's like an actual album, Run the Jewels mixtape. It's like an actual album. The songs flow into each other. But yeah, this last verse by Killer Mike is talking shit in the general direction of Jay-Z and Kanye and their Watch the Throne mixtape. So a little symmetry there. We'll ride out on that, and we will talk to you next week. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks, guys.
There will be no mercy me's. There will be no reprieve for the thieves. There will be no respect for thrones. No master these bones. Your idols, all of my rivals. I rival all of your idols. I stand on towers like Eiffel. I rifle down all your idols. Niggas are perish in Paris. Niggas is nothing but parrots. I write for the writers to write for the liars to impress you and your parents. Is this real or another dimension? Am I tripping here in the kitchen? Am I a victim of my convictions? I feel my sanity slipping. And I think I like the freedom. Cannibal, animal rappers, I eat them. Even in Dubai, I'm so like it's legal. Bitch so exotic, she rode on a zebra. Made in America, home of the eagle. Home of the anger. Home of the evil. Do what I do for the good of my people. Holding my lane, cocaine and a reef.
Trying not to walk crooked while this anchor's drop. But I've been out on them choppy waves, and it's hard to say when it's there begins and that water stops.
I got sea legs, I got sea legs, I got sea legs.
Try not to walk crooked while this anchor's dropped. But I've been out on them choppy waves, and it's hard to say when it's there begins and that water stops.
I got sea legs, I got sea legs, I got sea legs. LP, fuck boys, know the combination ain't healthy. Tell me if you smell the marijuana hanging off my breath, blowing smoke, and I'm coughing like I'm damn near death. If I died right now, I would be so fresh to death. They would have to say that fat motherfucker coughing fresh, goddamn fat.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio Boom.com. The wolf dead.